In any case, I'm very pleased to be asked to be chair this morning of an interesting session. The first speaker will be Daniel Fisher, who I've known at least since the eclipse in Indonesia in 1983, when he came by the American site then, and who runs a very interesting newsletter with all kinds of news, not only about eclipses, but also about other things in astronomy. I recommend it to all of you, and I'm glad to hear Daniel Fisher talk about getting your own AU with transits of Venus.
So thank you very much for inviting me, and at the very last moment, I must say, I suddenly got a phone call. It was somebody talking to me in fluent German on the phone who had no idea who that was. And only after a while I realized it was Patrick, who had never disclosed to me that he was fluent in German. And he invited me to fill a slot that had suddenly opened on Saturday morning, and I happily agreed to do so. Now, what I'm going to talk about is a very small eclipse. It's actually maybe an annular eclipse with a very thick annulus, which is a And I'm not talking about the event and how beautiful it was and so on, but about the scientific use you can make of it. Specifically measuring the astronomical unit with your own observations, not with other people's observations, but your own. The idea, of course, everybody knows. You observe the transit from two different spots on the Earth, at the left, and the chords, the Venus cuts across the Sun, are a bit shifted for each location. The idea of measuring distances via the parallax method is very old, as you can see from this very old drawing here. There are some people sitting on this side of the river down there, and they want to know how wide the river is, and so they measure the distance to a different distant tree from two different locations, and with a very little map, you actually get the distance. So that's kind of remote sensing, which is very simple to do. Now, with Venus, it's a bit more difficult because the shift is not really that large. For example, here in this animation, you see two Venuses crossing the Sun at the same time. They're an unusual event because you observe one from Germany and one from South Africa. Now, the more southern Venus is the one seen from Germany, and the more northern one from South Africa, because the transit took place in the southern half of Venus. And when you go to the southern hemisphere, of course, it shifts a bit to the north. So that's what it would have looked like, the computer animation, and what it really looks like. You can see here, these are actual photographs, although they are colored a bit crazily, from the Gong project. And you see, for example, here, this is the transit as seen from the Canary Islands, pretty far in the north. And the green one is seen from Australia, it's shifted significantly to the north, this is to the south, this is to the north. And seen from India, it's about halfway in between. Another way to visualize this front here, these are two actual photographs, one taken from France and one from Zimbabwe, overlaid. And you can see that there is a shift of about half the Venus diameter in the sky, on the Sun, on this disk of, projected on the disk of the Sun. The question is now, the effect is obvious, but the question is, how do you measure it precisely? And there are three basic approaches. How to measure the shift. The classical method, so to speak, is using timing. This was proposed by Halley, everybody knows, in the 18th century, and used widely in the 18th and 19th century during these four transits. But it's fraught with problems, because when is a contact a contact? There was a rather sobering experience in Germany. The University of Essen Education Department ran a big international Venus project, where people all over the world were supposed to send in their timings, and it turned out that in Germany, for example, even the best time contact, the second contact, the measurement scattered to within plus minus 2 minutes. So these people agreed a lot, disagreed a lot with each other, although everybody who was contributing thought that my contact timing is perfect. I must say, I fell into the same trap when I observed the contact from South Africa. I also was sure I got it to within 2 or 3 seconds. It was quite surprised to learn that many people see it so differently. Now, this is an experiment at a little astronomy convention in Germany. This is just a very preliminary result here, and we will repeat this experiment with a much larger audience. We had a fantastic video of the second contact, a friend of mine shot in Bonn, and we showed this video on a big projection screen. And had people, I read aloud the seconds, and people had to write down when they thought second contact had happened. You see the timeline up there, I did it twice. You see it's the timeline is about 40 seconds. And you see that most people indeed cluster around one value, plus or minus 5 seconds, but they are the outliers. And then I repeated the experiment, a different starting point on the tape, actually 10 seconds difference. Again, these three people saw the contact much earlier than the others. And the and if you look at the internal scattering, this is for the same guy, for the same people. What is the difference between the first and the second fighting? You see that the real value would be 10 seconds difference. That's quite a cluster here. And for you, for individuals, the scatter is rather low, rather small. But overall, it would be very hard to get the contact time out of this scatter vector up there. So you see, this is really problematic with these contact methods, as problematic as it was 200 years ago. Then there was an approach, much less publicized in public reports, on direct measurement of the shift on the solar disk, namely done within his heliometer. This is a very weird kind of telescope that is not built anymore, as far as I understand, where the front lens has been cut in half into half, and these halves can be shifted against each other. And you can measure the angular differences in the sky, small angles with very high precision. And he proposed a method for this, that you measure lots of different settings with the Venus. You get always two pictures at the same time of the sun with the Venus in front of it. And then you put it into different settings, the Venus touching here or there. And it takes about 25 minutes, they said, to make one set of these measurements. And these were also done quite extensively in the 19th century. Photographic astronomy, astrometry, would be the method of choice nowadays, especially with these modern imaging techniques. And there's another complication added, unfortunately. Here you see two pictures taken exactly the same moment. One from La Palma, with the Swedish Magnetic Solar Telescope with adaptive optics, and one taken by a German amateur astronomer here in Munich. And you see that the shift indeed. In one picture, Venus hasn't not yet crossed the rim of the sun, and here it certainly did. But the problem is in at which direction was Venus moving relative to the sun's limb. And to know that, you would have to know for both pictures very precisely where north is and so on. And often you don't have this information. One needs a reference to measure the shift of Venus against. One approach is to use the distance from the sun center. That was actually already used in the 19th century, the photographic approaches. And these people, again, from Essen University, they actually did that with some material, for example, comparing Essen with Cairo, and got rather decent results, like 149 million plus or minus 15 or so million kilometers out of that. So that works, even with rather poor photographs. Approach number two, was kind of invented by this astronomer from Munich, is to use the granulation. Now, if you could dim the lights a bit, this might come out clearer, that in both of these photographs, you can see the granulation behind the sun. The picture on the left, one of the pictures was taken in Munich and one was taken in Hong Kong. It was very difficult for this it was very hard to find a pair of these images because very few people took pictures at high enough resolution. But at least here it was possible to actually find this pair taken at the very same minute or second. You really have to be at almost the same moment because the granulation is changing all the time. If you look at the picture on the right, you will recognize that the granulation pattern is almost the same and Venus is jumping back and forth. And from this one existing pair, which may be the only pair of this quality in the whole world, despite these thousands and hundreds of thousands of pictures that were taken during this transit, you can deduce astronomical unit of 153 plus or minus 2%. The true value actually would have been 151.7. So this method is very promising, but of course you would like to have more pairs like these. And unfortunately they don't exist. Maybe in 2012 we are all wiser and do that. Now my own approach is astrometry relative to one or more sunspots. And fortunately, well, very fortunate, that there was still an activity region 627 around with two rather compact umbrae, which could be used to make distant measurements directly from Venus to this umbrae. And as it happened, a friend of mine was taking a series of pictures in Germany, and I was taking pictures in South Africa at the same time. Now, astronomical expeditions have changed a lot in what they look like. For example, this is a German transit expedition that went to Auckland Island, somewhere off Australia, in 1882, and they took this reflecting telescope and put the whole city around it. Nowadays, a bit simpler. This is the instrument my friend used in Germany. This is this thing up here. It's just a so-called Bussenfonge, which is a small magnetosystem system with 1 meter focal length and F10. This is a simple solar filter. And I used almost identical equipment in South Africa, at the Kedanstad National Park. Here you see my instrument. It's all even a scoping mounting, just on a tripod. As you see, the weather was not good at first contact to the itself looks pretty rather pretty, but you would rather have seen the context. Anyway, after an hour here, and I could start taking my picture seriously. It was quite an interesting event, actually, because at this remote location, we had lots of students who were very eager to understand what was going on there, and lots of extragalactic astronomers from this conference, which had coincidentally taken place during this time. It was, of course, no coincidence. It was another idea of getting people there. And I also learned at this event, this is something of interest for solar eclipse outreach as well, that projecting the sun with a really big Dobsonian telescope, that's a really big picture among these cameras. This is actually the most attractive way to present it. All people crowded around this projected image here. Now, this is a typical picture taken during these experiments. You see not much, you just see the sun with a little darkening. You see Venus and you see these two sunspots. And this had to be measured. And the idea was the following. Now you have these sunspots moving slowly across the sun because the sun is rotating. And you have these two Venuses, or Venus, I don't know what the plural of Venus is, crossing the sun at different spots from two different sides. And there will be one point in time when the two observers on Earth, Venus and the sunspot, are all in one plane in the universe. And at this, and only this moment, this angle can be measured directly, and this is exactly identical to this parallax angle. You can see it here, at this moment, the difference between these two measurements is exactly P, this parallax offset. While, for example, at this point, you would see the difference between these two vectors would be smaller, because you would only measure this part of the vector. So you really would expect that at one point in time, this difference between these two vectors would reach a maximum. This would then be the actual parallax you want. The mathematical analysis I did is rather simple. There are lots of approximations, reasonable ones, I hope. If you do a complete analysis and think about it, of all the spheres in the sky and how it all relates, it gets extremely complicated. There's so much theoretical trigonometry involved, and everything moves all the time. But you can do a lot of approximations, I think, and still get another good value. So the idea is there are two observers on Earth, separated by distance r. There is Venus. And there is the sun. And both observers see the sun on these Venus projected on the sun, and they measure this angle P, which is the difference of the projected image on the sun. Of course, the distance is not infinite. If it would be infinite, it would be exactly the same angle as truth. Actually, it's a bit smaller, but of course, we want to know E. And what we know from Kepler's third law, for example, is the ratio of V to E, of the radius of the major axis of Earth and of Venus. And so we can take that as a given. You can actually measure this as well if you want. If you take some more months and measure the greatest elongation of Venus in the sky, you can actually get this without Kepler. But of course, many people use Kepler for this. And the idea is then that with very little math, you find out the absolute value of E, which is more or less roughly the astronomical unit. Actual data, measurements of the vector from the sunspots to Venus at 7 different points, and we have simultaneous pictures from South Africa and from Germany. These are the vectors measured in 1,000th of the solar diameter, and most important, of course, is the difference between the vectors. Now you see it's oscillating around about 15,000th of a solar diameter, or 28 arc seconds. There is no real maximum at the time when you would expect it, which would have been about 8:30. So there is a lot of noise in the data, and you do not get this clear-cut maximum. But anyway, you can get from this table that the T is about 28 arc seconds. R between Germany and South Africa was about 8,000 kilometers. Therefore, one astronomical unit is 152 million kilometers, plus or minus 15. So there's an error of about 10% in this at this stage of analysis. But this is only from 7 photographs each, which are really not that of that high resolution. Actually, pretty poor resolution. How would you improve all that? First, you get more picture series, both from the north and from the southern hemisphere, at this better resolution. I suppose you would need at least one arc second. A really nice round Venus, which you can really measure to an arc second or better. Just received nice material from Crete, which is still under analysis, which is almost fulfilling this requirement. Unfortunately, I'm still looking for really good series from the southern hemisphere, either Africa or Australia. But I'm still fishing around, and this will certainly continue. The reason I did that was more or less for rhetorical reasons or for understanding how things could have gone better in the 19th century. I mean, you have all read these stories that astronomers are pretty dismayed with the results of all these planets and more or less disregarded them. For example, here you see a famous paper by Newcomb in the late 19th century, where he took all the ways people knew to measure the astronomical units, lots of different methods, aberration of starlight, oppositions of planets, and so on, and he gave them weights. To get the final value. And for example, observations of contact during transits of Venus, they gave them a weight of only 3, and measurements of the distance of Venus from the sun center, only 2, while others like aberration of starlight get a weight of 40. So you see the little respect people had for Venus transit observations at the end of the 19th century, when this method was clearly going out of favor. And I was just wondering if these methods of direct astrometry on the sun's disk may actually have gotten people better results that were more believable, and may have actually dominated the field a little bit longer. I still can't say that from my own derelict experiment. Hopefully after I've got more data sets and can do a more rigid statistical analysis, and will be able to see if these measurements may have worked. For example, I know that during the 1882 there was one nice compact sunspot group. And there's also a wonderful series of pictures taken from America. Unfortunately, there's no such series from the Southern Hemisphere, so I cannot repeat this analysis with historical data. But I think, at least in the photographic age, as is in 1874 and 1882, the methods of relative astrometry to features on the sun, either granulation or better yet sunspots, may have actually yielded a better astronomical unit than may have been possible from these very complicated and fuzzy timings. So that's what is my very preliminary conclusion, but I cannot still prove that it would have been the case. Anyway, it was a very fun experience, I must say, and it was at least for me personally a very didactic experience, because I mean I was measuring distances on globes, I was running around with slide projectors to optimize astrometrical setups and so on. You learn a lot by doing these experiments, and it was great fun. So I hope to repeat it with even better results in the end in 2012. You can read a preliminary proto paper, if you wish, on what I did under this email address, up here, and also some reports from Southern Africa here. And you can find out more about this experiment using the granulation at this address here, but this is only in German. These two reports are in English. So with that, I'd like to conclude and thank Patrick for inviting me, and also Friedhelm Dost for generous travel support. Thank you very much.
Interesting talk about this annular eclipse, this 0.1% annular eclipse. And I'm glad that we'll have several talks about the transit of Venus. Are there any questions for Daniel? Well, I think your mathematics was, and spherical geometry was so clear that there were no questions. And thank you very much.
Yeah, the formula actually is in the paper, the proto paper. So if you really want to find out what I did, just look at the paper.